tax case in our calendars, 96-1054, 96-2235, William Inyard versus the Columbus Metropolitan Area Community Action Organization. Mr. Beatty.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning. Please support. I'd like to first reserve 5 minutes of my allotted time.
Okay. Watch your time there on the clock.
Thank you very much. Please support the reason we're here this morning, three issues. The number one issue, of course, is the arbitration, so-called arbitration process, which is actually due to the mediation process. And the manner in which that is to be conducted under local court rules. The second, of course, is a very, very important issue, and that is the issue of a sua sponte opinion, where an appeal is actually dismissed, but the Court of Appeals actually, in a footnote, gives direction or mandate to a trial court. The third issue, and perhaps the all important issue, is a public policy issue that we're here on today, because it certainly is going to affect more than a quarter of a million small employers, about 300,000 employers in the state. And that is the issue that this court has previously addressed in Wilmsboro and also Handy and other cases, insofar as what is necessary, what are the prerequisites for someone to bring an action for retaliatory firing for violating a workers' compensation claim. The community action program that is impelling this action is a nonprofit community action organization. As all of you know, there are community action organizations, rural poverty programs, in just about every county in the state.
Mr. Kay, we've read the briefs. We understand the basic parties and all. The three points that you make, don't they all flow from what really amounts to, I guess some would say, a comedy of errors, because it's procedural from the very start. You allege an improper claim. They say, and the courts say, you didn't respond properly to the actions. If we just say this thing has been a confused thing from the start, maybe we ought to go to ground zero and start over, we never get to the public policy issue of the Roseboro case, or we don't have to decide the technical thing about a footnote in a Court of Appeals opinion, which is not any law we could really write on. Those issues aren't there, are they, if we don't go directly to the merits of these cases?
That's what I've come to call is cutting right to the chase. That's exactly correct. What we're asking the court to do is to go back to ground zero. Now, we feel that ground zero would be trial judge's decision to dismiss the case, because under Roseboro and under David Castle, the actual termination took place well after, or rather well before, an actual filing was there with the Bureau of Workers' Compensation. And yes, we would be asking the court to reverse the Court of Appeals and the various decisions and the plethora of decisions through the Court of Appeals, and to decide, yes, this was proper before the trial court. And the trial court did the right thing when the trial court looked at the evidence and said, there's no question about this here, that this man was terminated well before he filed his action. And file means file, in other words, taking over and time stamping it, because what we have here is a state-funded employer, and this court has talked about it, rightfully so, decided that there is a differentiation between a state-funded employer and a self-insured employer. Yes, the answer to your question is absolutely yes. That's where we should be, right back to the dismissal of this action. Insofar as the procedure is concerned, with the what's called the 103 procedure in the Franklin County Court of Common Pleas, I would say once again that the Court of Appeals was in error, because this issue has come up before the Court of Appeals on numerous instances. I would cite to you that, and I understand it's cited in our brief, the Ross case and the Cole case, two very similar instances where there was either a lack of an affidavit by the attorney that the appeal was not being filed, or delayed, or that there was an injustice being done, or that was left off. Another case where there was an argument about whether or not the other side received the notice of the appeal. In both of those cases, Franklin County Court of Appeals, 10th District Court of Appeals, decided that they were procedural, as Justice Douglas mentioned, that they were procedural issues and they were not jurisdictional issues. There's no question about the fact that an appeal was filed within the necessary time, that the necessary fees were paid, and that there was an attempt to do the appeal. I still believe that the certificate of service was sent out. Nonetheless, the record shows that counsel appeared at the trial, that the case was set for trial. There was never a journal entry put on until June 6th, 1995. Before all this happened, with all the motions and the like, there was never a journal entry put on. This was never journalized. As a matter of fact, the arbitration panel even said in their arbitration award that they were referring it on to the trial court for additional proceedings.
And of course, under Schaefer, that isn't an arbitration panel.
I agree. And taking into consideration Schaefer, and that is a part of our argument, that we should not even have had to file a notice of appeal, that the notice of appeal is really a nullity, because this is a mediation. It's not an arbitration. We didn't agree to it. Everybody knew that the parties were going to be bound by it. The trial court, as a matter of fact, even in the discovery orders, stated the discovery orders are the motion limits and the prohibition against our presenting evidence in this case. Keep in mind, we weren't allowed to present any evidence in this case based upon a discovery motion, and that discovery issue was because someone had had a stroke and died and couldn't find the records. But the trial court specifically said in this case, in the issue, that the prohibition was only to affect arbitration, was only by the arbitration. So everyone knew that this case was going to go to trial. It was really a mediation, not a binding arbitration. There was no agreement to do this. And so I believe that, and this is a part of our argument, I believe that, as a matter of fact, this was a mediation, not an arbitration. We had an absolute right to trial in Nova, even though we went through the necessary steps, even though we filed a notice of appeal, even though we paid money for the notice of appeal and did other things. I think you also have to take into consideration another overriding issue here, and that is this, is that the only reason, if you look at the affidavit that was filed in this case, signed by one of the arbitrators, I think it's very, very important. And that is, that affidavit lets the court know that the only reason that that decision of the arbitration panel was the way that it was because the pleadings, there was a misstatement in the pleadings. The issue about when the claim was filed at the Bureau of Workers' Compensation is misstated in the pleadings. And that was the impetus for all of us. That's why that affidavit is quite important. Insofar as another answer to your question is concerned, when you talk about Schaefer, when you talk about binding arbitration, this was not binding arbitration. I don't think there's any question about that. And I'm quite concerned, you mentioned in our brief, about the applicability, the constitutional issues, when you apply the way that this was done against our client. Insofar as the appeals are concerned, and I recognize that there was numerous appeals, and we were saying the same thing time after time after time after time in these appeals. The Court of Appeals said in the first decision, we should have filed a Rule 60B motion. Now, interestingly enough, none of this, the decision of the trial court, the decision of the panel, was never generalized. Court of Appeals said you should have filed a Rule 60B motion. Fine. We went back, filed a Rule 60B motion, filed a brand new amended notice of appeal. Timestamped once again, sent out once again. And this, I believe, would have meant Rule 5D, because there's no question about the second was sent out and received by all parties concerned. But I think on this issue of when a case is filed, and if you look at the terminology, as the court knows, says filed, initiated, or pursued. And this court has previously taken the position that insofar as a state-funded insurer is concerned, when you're talking about retaliatory suit against a state-funded insurer, that it has to be filed, not initiated or pursued. And I would ask this court, from a public policy standpoint, to think about the problems it created for over a quarter of a million employers. Almost 95% of them would have fewer than four employees. The problems would be created in a situation where someone is off work, they've got a situation like a community action organization had, where they're working in teams, they've got to have somebody there to do the work, or the job doesn't get done, and they've got to bring somebody else in. So they don't know what this person that's off work is doing. And I want you to think about a situation that might occur from a public policy standpoint, where all that person had to do, that employee had to do, was to just sit back, wait to file this claim, say if they fire me, then I'm going to file a claim, then I'm going to go file under 412390. That would put all small employers in the state in an untenable position. It would be just like walking through a minefield. So I would ask the court to take that into consideration. I would also ask the court to reaffirm its prior decisions in Roseboro and the other cases that state that position. If you even look at the administrative rules, the responsibility of a state-funded employer as compared with a self-insured employer are entirely different. What the claimant has to do with a state-funded employer is entirely different. The claimant can walk over and file his or her application with the Bureau anytime they want to, whereas under the rules with a self-insured employer, that claimant has to go sit down with the employer, and the employer has to then process the paper. That's not the case. That's not the case with a state-funded employer. The other issue that we would say to the court, and I would hope that what this court would do is not to send this matter back, but to reinstate the judgment of the trial court in saying that our Rule 60B motion is proper, and also that under Roseboro, and we proceed on the subsequent cases, that the court would find that the employee did not file, and so therefore filed properly before the termination. So therefore, he has no cause of action. If in fact this court didn't do that, it still has to go back to the trial court because there is an absolute mandate under the statute that there is a set off for payments received by workers' compensation against any claim that they may have for this retaliation. Now, unfortunately, many of the payments that Mr. Inyard received were well after this arbitration, and that, of course, is in the brief. And quite frankly, if you add these numbers up, he's been fully compensated. But the Court of Appeals said that the trial court should not even conduct that yet, and we think that that's improper. So as a second position, we would request the court, if the court felt that it did have to send this back for further hearings, we would try to know that certainly there'd be a hearing to see if he was fully compensated. And one of the reasons, quite frankly, that we weren't able to show all this is because we've tried to depose this man time after time after time after time. As a matter of fact, in a hearing before one of the magistrates, the court even ordered his previous attorney and him to be there. Didn't show up, neither the previous attorney nor him. We've never even had the opportunity to post that. I would thank you very much.
What was the date of the trial court's first dismissal? Because I think with all these briefs that we have and the various appeals and the dismissals, like for instance in February 16th, 93, the trial court issued an order in judgment entry dismissing your appeal. That's from the so-called arbitration. There's got to be an earlier order than that, and I suspect that probably isn't directly before us. That's why I can't find it. What was the date?
Well, the problem is this. This case started out with Judge King.
Yes, I know.
And
Judge O'Neill took it over.
And Judge O'Neill took over, and Judge O'Neill apparently refused the pleadings. I think she's been on the bench a month and a half or so. And then she apparently refused the pleadings that were paid before Judge King. And keep in mind that everybody showed up to trial in December on this case, December 92 in this case, before Judge King. Judge King was in a homicide case. He couldn't hear the case. They got continued. And Counsel for Appellee filed a motion in that case asking to remain on Judge King's docket. Of course, he was gone. Then Judge King was reappointed. Judge O'Neill kept the case. But to answer your question,
yeah, would you?
In September 1994, in response to our 60B motion, that's when Judge O'Neill dismissed the case of the appellee based upon the fact that, number one, counsel Ray Patel had come to court and admitted that she knew about the appeal. Number two, all the pleadings and affidavits showed that NYAR had filed its application at the Bureau of Workers' Compensation.
Yeah.
About a month after he did.
I understand, but that was after the remand from the Court of Appeals, maybe the second time.
At least the first time. Yeah,
okay,
yes.
Fine. So it was an interim thing. She didn't dismiss it early on in the pleadings. Either she or Judge King didn't dismiss it, and I haven't missed an entry that dismissed it on the basis of the original filing.
Not on the basis of the original filing.
Okay,
this was
fine.
After.
Yeah, I got it. Thanks.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Beatty. Ms. Ullman.
Good morning. I believe what this case is really about is rules. Who follows them, who must follow them, who can blatantly disregard them, and keep a matter before this court three times now, before the Court of Appeals, Oblong County, denied Mr. Enders. We're going on to 8 years now that he was injured and did everything he could do to initiate his claim.
His claim was filed and accepted, wasn't it?
His workers' claim.
Yes.
He not only this claim, he had an open, pending, active workers' compensation claim prior to this injury.
No, but I just want to be sure. You seem to be indicating that he's been foreclosed for 8 years. He's either receiving now or did receive workers' compensation during the period of time that he alleged an injury for, didn't he?
That's correct, Your Honor. It's not his workers' compensation award that...
No, I understand what's here.
The wrongful discharge retaliation award that we've now been litigating for almost 8 years. There are rules of discovery which early on Camacho completely ignored, causing Judge Chen to make certain orders. There's no fault with Rule 103 in the arbitration process. Camacho had the opportunity to object to that process. They didn't do that. They had the opportunity to appeal from that process. They didn't do that correctly. They had the opportunity to file a 60B. They didn't do that correctly. Everything that was available to them allowed them to fully litigate any and all of these claims that they're raising before you today, including your taking of their second appeal to this court when they actually won this court below. They filed an appeal here, you took the case in, and even then they didn't comply with the rules. They didn't brief that. So we have here more important issues, I believe, than this initial firing and whether the claim was filed, initiated, presented prior to or after the filing. We have rules that have been set for attorneys to practice by, for courts to follow. Neither Camacho nor Judge O'Neill, after she took the case over, have followed any of the rules. If she had done what the Court of Appeals told her to do a long time ago, this would have been over. So we have the issues of race judicata, law of the case, certainly. When this case came up the first time, the court didn't take it in. At that time, the Court of Appeals had affirmed the arbitration award. Had ordered the lower court to affirm it, the Court of Appeals affirmed that this court didn't take it in. That became law of the case for this case.
I would agree with you that all of those are very important, and the rules of the road that we establish have to be followed in order to make sure that the cases proceed in proper order. Race judicata and law of the case, all that is important. Isn't it also important that original pleadings be truthful?
We believe they were truthful, Your Honor. In fact, they admitted in their answer,
but I also read the fact that the claim was filed after the date of discharge.
Our client couldn't file it, Your Honor. My client did everything he could do to initiate the claim. It was Camacho that had to actually take the papers to the workers' comp and do the, quote, literal filing of it. We could do no more than we did.
What is the bottom line in this case for you? What would you like to see this court do with this case?
Well, first and foremost, Your Honor, we would like you to vacate the most recent stay. We've had stays on executing all the awards so many times, we'd like you to immediately vacate that. Affirm what the Court of Appeals has been saying in low of any cases that have been before this court, that the arbitration award should stand, and the only issue remaining to be determined was the issue referred back to the court by the arbitration panel, and that is attorney fees.
And that has never been resolved.
That's all we've had hearings on. I can't tell you how many motions, how many times before the court and the Court of Appeals. But the only remaining issue is attorney fees, and that's never been heard. So the bottom line for us is affirm the award, send it back for attorney fees, and please vacate the stay. 5 years now we've been waiting for the money. It appears that simple to me, Your Honors, unless you have other questions for me. It's been briefed so many times, it's been argued so many times. If you want me to address the issue of the improper affidavits from Paula Stroud way after the fact that we had no input to her, the fact that even approaching an arbitrator is improper, I would do that. It just seems that my client has done everything that has been asked of him for about 8 years now, and he's still been denied due process. So if you want to talk about due process, this is due process against Mr. Ayers. Camacho has had every opportunity, many times, to fully litigate every issue that they've raised here. This is the second time you've seen this litigant of issues. That the first time he did brief it, now he's briefed it. All we're asking is
thank you, Ms. Allman. Mr. Beatty, you've used your time. You may take 30 seconds.
Thank you very much. Please, Court, first of all, let me say that insofar as issues on race and law case, there's exceptions to that. One of the exceptions, of course, is fraud and misstatements. There's no question about the fact there's a mistake in this case. We talk about the equities here, community action program, and find fault for what we did find. But then on the other hand, this man never showed up for a deposition. He's profited a great deal by this. He's collected welfare, Medicaid. They charged him with welfare fraud, convicted of it. Charged him with unemployment compensation fraud, convicted of it. He has totally milked the system. He's gotten workers' compensation throughout all of this. He's gotten welfare throughout all of this. He's got charged with criminal offenses because of that. The issue about the attorney fees is just not the case. In several of the motions and memorandum, there's a transcript from Magistrate Angel where previous counsel, who's since been disbarred by this court, was told to show up and bring records. Never happened. The referee decided that, look, this is enough of this. I'm not going to recommend any attorney fee because you didn't even present anything to us. We once again state that we would ask the court to uphold the trial court's decision to dismiss this case.
Thank you. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion.